Trend number six, the evolving future of the automobile industry. The failure of General Motors was a shock to the entire nation, if not the world. The backbone of the auto industry that had once seemed so sturdy simply collapsed under the weight of a faltering economy, a rapidly changing industry, the heavy burden of legacy costs, a faulty business model, and an obsolete strategy. But as bad as things look right now for the auto industry, taking the long view gives a completely different picture. This is a classic situation in which creative destruction is going to remake the landscape, and the pieces are all in place to do so. That's why the trends editors believe that we're in an inevitable transition from an outdated industry structure, now 100 years old, to a new model for the future. So what's ahead? According to Strategy and Business, for example, we are poised to experience the greatest wave of expansion that the industry has ever seen. Indicative of this new direction, Business Week reported in March on the debut in India of the $3,000 Nano, a groundbreaking microcar by Tata Motors. Many other manufacturers, including Chery in China, Maruti in India, and traditional firms like Renault and Volkswagen, are designing cheap new cars aimed at the same emerging markets. One of the main factors leading to this renaissance involves the rapidly growing economies of countries like India, Indonesia, and China. Collectively, these economies and several smaller ones will produce an unprecedented demand for cars. Millions and ultimately billions of people will want automobiles in the coming decades. Booz & Company studied the global market and divided it into three broad categories. The first lies in the rapidly emerging economies such as Brazil, Russia, India, Malaysia, Argentina, Mexico, Turkey, Thailand, Iran, Indonesia, and China. Millions of people are already poised to purchase their first automobile in those nations. The second category lies in 100 other lower-growth countries that are also relatively poor. Their leaders, interested in building a middle class, see personal mobility as one of the key ingredients. That market will emerge strongly, starting in about 2020. And the third group lies in the developed countries, where the growth of the population and the replacement of older cars are the primary forces spurring demand. For executives and analysts accustomed to dealing only with the third group, the scale of this total potential market is hard to fathom. By 2013, an estimated 370 million new cars could be sold, and upwards of 715 million by 2018. The trick is going to be figuring out a business model and a strategy that can meet this demand. The traditional way the automobile industry has done business will no longer work. That model was designed for a largely homogeneous market and for a very few internally homogeneous markets, such as the U.S., Japan, and major countries in Western Europe. Since at least World War II, every manufacturer has sold similar cars with the same kind of powertrain and chassis through a network of franchise dealers. Most of the sales and marketing took place in the U.S., Europe, and Japan. But the future markets are not homogeneous by any means. The emerging markets are not only different from the U.S. and Europe, they're different from one another, too. Everything is different, including geography, culture, taste, natural resources, and population density. The governments are all different as well, with different policies and priorities. Roadways and energy infrastructure are widely divergent, too. Such a simple issue, like how far a car should go on a tank of gas, may be different from one nation to another. Is public transportation available? How many people, on average, should fit into the car? What sort of safety requirements are there? What kind of a distributor network can function in a given country? And, of course, what do people want and like? Car makers may find that locally available resources or constraints dictate car design. For example, they may design a car for biofuels to sell in Brazil, one using diesel in Russia, which has plentiful oil, and an electric car for large Western cities that want to reduce pollution. There is a well-known relationship between personal income and car ownership that has been extensively studied. As income rises, people want mobility and car ownership goes up. That growth is slow as an economy first develops, and then it goes ballistic and takes off. Later, it forms the tail of the classic S-curve as demand settles down to a replacement rate. Growth of ownership in the rapidly emerging economies is now the fastest in the world, and first-time owners are leading the way. Manufacturers will have to invest a great deal in learning what each market is like. Markets that initially look promising may turn out to have show-stopping flaws. For example, Brazil is the leading country when it comes to rapidly emerging economies, but its relatively small population of 188 million people already own 104 cars per 1,000 people, 10 times the rate of India, as reported by the Economist Intelligence Unit. Growth there is apt to be as slow as 2% per year, according to the research company Global Insight. This would be less than the long-term growth in U.S. automobiles, which is considered sluggish at 3.2% per year. By contrast, Russia has an even smaller population of 142 million people, with ownership at 213 cars per 1,000 people. Nevertheless, Global Insight expects growth there to be about 6.5% per year due to a demand for more high-end cars. However, the intricacies of most markets make it difficult to guess what the prospects might be without thorough research, which really hasn't been done yet. One market that appears to be a no-brainer is India. With 1.1 billion people and only 11 cars per 1,000 inhabitants, it is expected to have skyrocketing growth. Even during the present recession, auto sales there are strong. Small electric cars are a good long-term bet since India doesn't have oil and it's enthusiastic about nuclear power plants. The current low market penetration in that country may be due to regulations that kept out foreign automakers from 1947 to 1990. New regulations promoting foreign ownership and protection for intellectual property will make it a good place to make and sell cars in the years to come. What can we expect in this ever more complex auto industry of the future? Please consider the following 6 forecasts. First, the traditional automakers in Europe, North America, and Japan can still win big in this global industry shift if they seize the opportunities. But they must act soon and not be bothered by short-term concerns. Short-term recovery plans may work for a while, but they won't succeed over a 10-year time frame and beyond. Some companies are already changing their strategies, and they serve as good models. For example, Daimler AG and Volkswagen have chosen to concentrate on 3 types of cars for 3 different uses. The first is for use in cities. It is electric, designed for low speed and low duration. It will serve someone who wants to drive to the train that takes him to work or for shopping trips. It could be used as a communal car. Daimler-Benz is introducing its electric car soon. The second car is for longer distances at higher speeds. It will make a good family car, and it will be a hybrid. The third vehicle will be for even longer distances and even higher speeds. It will probably use diesel fuel and have high mileage and a clean-burning profile. Second, a huge opportunity exists for creating the infrastructure as well as the vehicles. Whatever the fuel, whether electricity, ethanol, hydrogen, or something else, there will have to be a new infrastructure. Those companies that can figure out how to do this efficiently for each market will dominate. Third, for the first time in more than half a century, small startups will enter the car industry, and some will do surprisingly well. A company in China called BYD for Build Your Dream intends to be a leader in car manufacturing. It was founded in 1995 to make small rechargeable batteries. It worked its way to a leading position in lithium-ion technology for cell phones and other mobile devices, garnering a third of the market globally. In 2003, it bought a car factory and developed a mini car and a convertible. As of 2007, it had almost 2% market share in China. It plans to be the largest manufacturer of automobiles in China by 2015 and to dominate the world by 2025. That might be an unnerving thought for conventional auto giants, but it can also provide inspiration for small entrepreneurs to get into the auto industry at this crucial stage. Fourth, small no-frills vehicles will be center stage during the coming decade. Renault teamed up with Dacia Group of Romania to launch its Logan no-frills car in 2004. Sales went up 20% between 2005 and 2006. The Logan is now being built in Romania, Colombia, Brazil, and elsewhere. The Indian automaker Mahindra & Mahindra helped Renault cut costs by 15% for the Logan's launch in that nation. The car has a simple design with half the parts of a conventional car and little in the way of electronics. Owners can repair it themselves. Built into the design are features to allow the car to handle the bad roads and poor quality of fuel encountered in many nations. But the air conditioning is super powerful for hot climates. In its attention to cultural and local nuances, the Logan may be setting the standard for competitors to follow. Fifth, a critical success factor for the emerging global automobile industry will be matching distribution channels, services, and financing to each market opportunity. No one knows what this end of the business will look like, so there is a vacuum waiting to be filled with a novel solution. Those who step in boldly with a good idea could establish a dominance that would be hard to disrupt. And sixth, a low-end car could disrupt the American automobile industry. A car like the Logan, priced at a few thousand dollars, would compete not with more expensive cars, but instead with public transportation and bicycles to solve the transportation needs of low-income families, college students, and high school students. Like other disruptive innovations, it could enter the market by targeting an overlooked market with a stripped-down product, then migrate upward to capture even larger market share.